The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. Welcome, welcome. Oh, we have this Arctic blast coming in. Thank you, Jim. It's nice to see you all. Here we are on a warm October day. And tonight I want to talk about sometimes we have this feeling that things aren't quite right, not going the direction we want them to go. And yet we can still find freedom there. And I want to start with a poem, a very short poem that I've read before. I can't remember if I've done it on a Monday night here. Chances are I have. And there's something very, endearing about this poem. So it goes like this. First, the fish needs to say, something ain't right about this camel ride, and I'm feeling so damn thirsty. First, the fish needs to say, something ain't right about this camel ride, and I'm feeling so damn thirsty. I don't know, I think this is a very playful poem. It's by Hafiz, a 14th century Persian poet. And I feel like he's kind of has this playful wisdom that even though it's from like 700 years ago, still speaks to us today. This is a way in which he might be with a little smile and a wink and a nod, might be pointing to what we might say is kind of like the first noble truth. There is suffering. A fish on a camel ride. We can imagine, right? Okay, this is not usually what fish do, what they want to do, or something like this. But the promise of the spiritual life is that no matter what the conditions are, the inner conditions, the outer conditions, freedom can be found. Freedom can be experienced. And this freedom, sometimes it's just available right then, or sometimes it's helpful. We start to put things into place, conditions get created in which more and more freedom becomes available. And part of the practice, this Buddhist practice, I would say any spiritual practice that leads to more freedom is about noticing the lack of freedom. Sometimes we're trying to avoid that. We're trying to pretend like it doesn't exist. Of course, we don't want to feel that. But part of this practice of towards freedom is noticing the lack of freedom and noticing how often we're turning away from it, how we just don't want to see it. And this is like just not being with our experience, not being with what's happening. And Hafiz points this out in this poem saying, something ain't right. We could say that in this poem that I just read, that Hafiz is pointing to dukkha, that is the sense of something ain't right. Of course, dukkha often gets translated as suffering or unsatisfactoriness or stress, but this one word doesn't have an English equivalent, but it has this wide, wide, wide range from just tiny, mild irritation to horrifying, terrifying things. So the single word for everything, dukkha, dukkha. And we could say that in this poem, well, maybe the fish thought that being on the camel was a good idea. I mean, camels are very useful, helpful creatures. They carry things long distances and through the desert. And in my mind, Hafiz, being a Persian poet, probably was familiar with this idea of deserts. But maybe the camel isn't right for this fish. It's certainly maybe not at this time. Maybe while the fish is alive, maybe. I don't know. But we could understand this camel ride, like being a fish on a camel, as a way of maybe the way that there's this patterns that we find ourselves being taken away with, that we're just taking a ride on these patterns, these habits, these ways in which we pick up views or identities that maybe aren't so helpful. But we find ourselves doing it again and again. Because in this poem, this fish is always saying, and I'm so damn thirsty. I don't know who the translator is of this poem. I really looked and tried to find, because I just think, I don't know, it just has such a playful quality to it, being so damn thirsty. So thirst itself is also a type of dukkha. But those of you who have been in the Buddhist scene for a while will know that thirst is often a translation for this Pali word tanha, which is often given as the cause for suffering. Like this thirst is also what's underlying suffering. So we could say it's like this thirst, it's like this, the dryness of like this not enough or not okay. And it's might be playing around with this poem, it might be what gets us back on the camel again, trying to go find something to assuage this thirst, to make us feel like, okay, it's enough. So there was this thing that this recognition of suffering, of course, is a part of the non-freedom, is part of this path of freedom. Many of you will also know, right, this is the first noble truth. There is dukkha. I love this. It's so simple. There is dukkha. That's the first noble truth. There is suffering. Seeing difficulties clearly and maybe honestly naming them. Recently, I noticed I had been spending way too much time just like on screens. Some of it was work, but some of it I didn't need to be doing, but it was work. And then it's bled into, oh, this is interesting. And let me go check this out. And then there's something when you just spend too much time on screens, it kind of like creates a different reality in some kind of way. But it was so helpful for me just to say like, okay, Diana, enough with the screens. Just put them all down, turn them off, go outside. That was really helpful. It was really helpful. And this is just a simple example. But there's a way sometimes just naming and acknowledging some of the difficulties that we're having. This feeling like, oh, I got to click on this. Oh, wait, the next thing. And, oh, what about that? Yeah, better look this up. And, oh, yeah, okay, got to make a note for that. I might want that for a talk later. And then I just end up down these rabbit holes. Has anybody ever done that? You're right. Yeah, right? We've created a society that's all about kind of distraction, doing anything except acknowledging and being with difficulties, right? This whole social media thing is all about, oh, look at my curated, perfect, beautiful life, or something like this, some version of that. So Hafiz, even though he was talking 300 years ago, he's pointing to this, something that we have this experience ourselves. There is dukkha. And it can be helpful to just acknowledge it and clearly name it. And then Hafiz, he names this first truth, the discomfort of being on the wrong ride, if you will. And then he points to the second truth, the thirst that keeps us climbing back on this craving. So obviously we want to get off the camel if we were a fish. And this is partly why we meditate. And this is partly what meditation practice is about. It helps create a certain amount of collectedness or settledness. instead of this always looking for something more and more and more. Maybe some of that still happens when we meditate. Of course it does. I mean, if we've been doing that with our eyes open, that's the same momentum is going to happen when we close our eyes. But there's a way in which if we can stay on the cushion and as best we can let go of the distractions, then there's this way in which the mind starts to become more calm and maybe more balanced, less looking forward and more just the being here. And it's less clouded by this craving or this thirst or the opposite, like this aversion, get this away from me, and resistance. And then with this settling, it makes it easier to observe things as they are, instead of how we are imagining them or remembering them or anticipating them. Instead, we start to see how things are here in this moment. And we stop trying to fix or flee as best we can, but are just noticing, oh, it's like this. And partly of what it's like this is in the stillness, we start to see that experiences, or we could even say things, are showing themselves to us as they are. Everything's changing. It's always changing. Nothing's exactly the same. It's only an idea that thinks they're the same, but the actual experience is always changing. And there's nothing really to hold on to when we're looking at experience. It's just one experience and then another and then another, arising and passing, arising and passing, arising and passing. Just this collection of experiences that are changing. When the mind is quiet, we really start to see that. When the mind drifts off into thought, that's when we start to grab onto concepts and ideas and views and these things, because they're not actually real, they're just thoughts. Those seem to be constant. But actual experience, you know, like bodily experience or even like the nature of our thoughts, they're changing, and there's nothing really to hold on to because they're just changing, arising and passing again and again. And then we also see that, oh, it's not being controlled by anybody. It's just happening, these experiences. We can't hold on to them, and we're not controlling them. Doesn't mean we're not trying. Doesn't mean that we wish we couldn't control our experiences. Of course, we want to have particular experiences and not have other ones. But when the mind quiets down, when meditation allows us to quiet down and get a little more settled and collected, we start to notice this with our experiences. This isn't a philosophy. This isn't about something to believe, or this isn't about something to know. I'm just planting the seed for something that you might notice when you're meditating or quiet. And this is maybe what we can say, that it's what's felt directly when we are able to be with our experience. And there's a way in which we stop arguing with what is, and instead is just experiencing the experiences. Instead of trying to fix it or make it be different, like, oh, nope, it's like this. And so when we notice that everything's changing, we can't control it, there isn't anything to really hang on to, then there's just a natural response. We don't have to make it happen. It just occurs naturally. And that is a letting go. There's a way in which there can be like maybe a sigh or a long exhale. Maybe we didn't even recognize that there was this way in which we were a little bit tight and clenched and trying to make things be a certain way. Dang it. Damn. damn it, I'm feeling so damn thirsty. That's what it is. So there's this way that this letting go is, it's not something that we actually are doing. It's something that's just naturally happening when we start to notice the quality of our experiences. We could say, in some ways, it's like it's gravity that's reclaiming what we've been holding up with effort, with this sense of, oh, I gotta manipulate this and change it into being something else than what it is. But when we stop trying to change things to be something else, then there's this way, there can be such a relief. This, like, this putting down, allowing things to be put down. It can feel like, oh my gosh, I didn't even realize how heavy that was. What I was carrying around, these expectations I was putting on everything and then getting irritated when none of the expectations got met. This way that I felt like people didn't see me the way I wanted them to see me, and I had to do all these things to make sure they only saw me as a kind, nice, helpful, smart, creative, strong, you know, whatever adjectives you want to put in there. There's these subtle ways in which we're doing all this. But when we notice that they're changing, there isn't actually really anything there to hold on to. I mean, right? We're not, right now, there's a little tension in my shoulders, something I was doing earlier. Like, it's just an experience. Like, what is there to hold on to? It's just a little tightness in the shoulders. And I'm not controlling it, right? If I were controlling it, I would think about it and say, go away now, please. But it doesn't. I mean, I don't. Well, maybe I am, right? Subtly saying, time to go away. There's so many ways in which we do this, right? But this freedom that's available in any experience, even if you're a fish riding on a camel, is about this letting go. It's about the putting down. It's about stopping the clinging or the craving or the wish, trying to change something. It's just a natural falling away. So when this letting go happens, not only is there more freedom, there's also more joy and more happiness. Maybe it's born a little bit out of that relief, but it's also just this greater ease and peace. And when there's ease and peace and relief, there's a certain amount of happiness that arises, a certain amount of well-being that arises. And so in some ways, we could say that this practice all comes down to just this letting go. But when I use this expression, letting go, it makes it sound like we are letting go. What's being pointed to here is a letting go that happens. We're not making it happen. It's a letting go that is so thorough. It's like such a complete letting go that it's a letting go of letting go. It's a letting go of anything that needs to be let go of. It's a letting go of a person who is doing the letting go. And this is the deepest freedom. Nibbana is pointed to in this way. Just this thorough, complete letting go. In a way that nothing is left. Or we could say everything is available. The opposite too. So this idea of letting go, I talked about how there's a way in which when we can see that things are changing and we don't control them and there's nothing really there, then our relationship shifts. And the relationship helps us to let go, But maybe there's another poet that I'd like to read a second poem here that points to this in a different way. And this poet is Matty Weingast. He's writing and he's a contemporary. And he's maybe echoing some of the ancient wisdom that Hafiz pointed to, but it's a little bit different. And Matty Weingast, he's a poet who is inspired by the Terigata, which are the awakening poems of women from the time of the Buddha. So the collection of poems from women who had an awakening experience, and this was part of their poems. Okay, so the poem goes like this. While walking along the river, after a long day meditating on Vulture Peak, I watched an elephant splashing its way out of the water and up the bank. "Hello, my friend," a person waiting there said, scratching the elephant behind its ear. "Did you have a good bath?" The elephant stretched out its leg. The person climbed up, and the two rode off like that, together. Seeing what had once been so wild, now a friend and companion to this good person, I took a seat under the nearest tree and reached out a gentle hand to my own mind. Truly, I thought, this is why I came to the woods. The poem begins with this image of strength and power, an elephant that's coming out of the river. And in the Pali Canon, sometimes the elephant can symbolize the mind, huge and strong and maybe even easily disturbed, but capable of being trained. And they sometimes practice is likened to training an elephant in the Pali Canon. And in this poem, to see what had been once so wild, to recognize, oh yeah, her mind used to be so wild, but now it's tamed. And then she ends. Well, maybe I'll just say with a little bit about to recognize this mind is the same energy that caused the suffering, this reactive, craving mind is like responding to care, is responding to understanding, as opposed to this way of which we're trying to make it be different. We want that mind to behave differently, have different experiences. And then she reaches out a gentle hand to her own mind. We could say that maybe this gesture is a letting go. It's having like this gentle touch with the mind instead of our trying to make the mind have certain experiences. There's a little bit of a paradox here because with meditation, like we're bringing the mind back to the anchor for mindfulness practice. But there's a way in which it's also like acknowledging, oh yeah, having a mind that's restless or not really present is like this. And there's a way in which can we, not because we want it to be different or because we think it should be otherwise, but because we care about ourselves. And we have made a commitment for this period of time to train the mind. So it's born out of some gentleness as opposed to trying to make the mind be something different. So there's this way in which we could say that the suffering like maybe tightens, makes us tense, and the softening or the bringing gentleness or care allows us some opening. And the movement towards greater freedom is this one from tense more to open, from tightness to open, from clinging to just recognizing how things are. So I'll read this poem again. While walking along the river, after a long day meditating on Vulture Peak, I watched an elephant splashing its way out of the water and up the bank. "Hello, my friend," a person waiting there said, scratching the elephant behind its ear. "Did you have a good bath?" I don't know, for me this is like so tender, kind of, just this sweetness here. The elephant stretched out its leg, the person climbed up, and the two rode off like that, together. Seeing what had once been so wild, now a friend and companion to this good person. I took a seat under the nearest tree and reached out a gentle hand to my own mind. Truly, I thought, this is why I came to the woods. So this idea of a fish on a camel as suffering, and a person befriending an elephant, and an elephant stretching out its leg, and the person stepping on it and getting on, and them riding off together. These two different images is kind of this movement from suffering towards freedom, towards kind of like befriending what had been once so wild, and having it be a companion and something that's a helper and helpful, as opposed to something that's just feels something ain't right. So these are two poems that I just really enjoy. I think I like the imagery of them, and I like the evocative sense of them. And we could say that practice in some ways is moving from one to the other. Hafiz in the 14th century and Mehdi Weingast and I think in the early 2000s, not so long ago, just talking about this. Maybe I'll end there and open it up to see if are there any questions or comments. Thank you.
I was thinking about versus totally letting go, kind of a spectrum of letting go, part, and how I thought of how I experienced that over the weekend. In maybe this is a, I don't know what kind of example, but a 14-year-old girl I was with, we were at the beach, and she wanted to go into the ocean in her leggings and her t-shirt. And I'm like, well, I might have to go get wet too if she gets into trouble. So I let go enough to let her do that. And it was lovely to see how happy she was in the water. And I guess with a lot of, Buddhist concepts, like let's say self, non-self, embodiment, all kinds of things, I think about them on a spectrum. So what do you think about that?
Yeah,
the
yeah.
Spectrum idea.
Yeah, I would say the more we let go, the more freedom we have. And so, and definitely just this movement is more freedom, but absolutely we let go of some things. And with, I would say just let go, let go, let go, let go wherever you can. It doesn't matter if it's something really small or if it's something really big, just this, we just start to discover the more that we're just trying to hold on, it's unnecessary suffering.
Yeah, because I think my first impulse, my reactionary thing would be, you don't have a swimsuit, you're not going in the ocean, you know, blah, blah. But then I thought, well, she really wants to. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll just say, as I not too long ago was hiking and found this beautiful alpine lake, I kind of want to go in. I just went in wearing my hiking clothes. They're supposed to be quick dry, all this kind of stuff. There's something just about breaking the rules and being in the water in this kind of way. Like, I'm just going to do it. So it just made me and everybody that was with me, we were just laughing and smiling and stuff like this. Hopefully you guys were laughing and smiling too. Yeah. Great. Thank you, Lena. Right behind you.
So if dukkha is suffering and Mara causes dukkha, what exactly is Mara? Is it false ideas? Is it made up of false ideas, ideas that aren't true that we hold on to?
Yeah, I love this idea of Mara. I've given a number of talks on Mara, and some people would say that Mara, well, I don't know, causes suffering. I wouldn't necessarily have said that. So those of you who don't know, Mara is a character that shows up in the Pali Canon and kind of pesters the Buddha. And I would say he's a personification of those things that, that can lead to suffering. Those things that are obstructions for us or that get in the way. And so your question was, is Mara, what does that make Mara?
Yeah, like, what exactly is Mara? Yeah. Is it a bunch of false ideas that we hold on to? Or?
Yeah, I think that's a great way. That's a great way of thinking about it. But it could also, I would say, be patterns that we have, just kind of this momentum. And the Buddha, often in the Pali Canon, when Mara shows up, just says, "I see you, Mara." And then Mara, poof, leaves. So it's kind of, when we see things clearly, they often start, they shift and change. Maybe in the same way here, when we see things clearly, then we start to let go. Maybe it's the same thing. Maybe the letting go is Mara going poof and leaving. Thank you, Matt.
Don't know if I have a whole idea here, but...
That's all right. We'll work with it.
There's the thought I had while you were saying it, it's about that the practice of self-care comes from a place of self-care, letting go. For me, oftentimes, it's actually the opposite. In order to take care of myself, it often requires imposing an expectation. In other words, letting go is sort of a natural and oftentimes not in my own best interest. So, not sure what the question is.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Can you unpack this idea of self-care a little bit? What do you mean by that?
In allowing for something to not be right and not allow it is self-care sometimes.
So something that, let's just say, isn't right. Quote, unquote.
Yeah.
And then...
Like if you, I mean, it's a silly example, but if you wouldn't allow yourself to keep your hand in a flame, you don't let go there and let things be. It's something related to that, where it's not care, self-care to just let go and let things be.
So you're saying, if I turn this around, does it mean we might harm ourselves if we're letting things be?
Thank you, yeah.
I see. Yeah. So thank you for saying this. I'm pointing to our experiences, so like really like direct experiences. And I think if there's a flame, right? I mean, we can't even choose whether we want to leave it in or not. Something that's painful, we're going to pull away from. That's just probably biology. But I agree that we shouldn't just passively accept everything. Like sometimes there's harmful things that are happening to us. People are crossing boundaries, or we're eating too many donuts, or whatever it is, right? And so, but instead just to let go. There's a way if we let go of the idea that things have to be otherwise thoroughly, then we will also be letting go what's driving this donut eating, or what's driving our not setting the boundaries more clearly. So often it's if we can be with the completeness of our experience, then the way in which we're trying to distract ourselves or people please because we feel bad, that starts to go away. Does this make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I can appreciate that hearing this, like let go. It can sound like, no, I don't want to let go, because if I do, then A, B, and C is going to happen. Something terrible is going to happen. But I'm talking about our experiences, and I'm also talking about if we can allow what is thoroughly, then we will discover that so many of our coping mechanisms aren't needed. It's uncomfortable, but it's not, there's a way in which we spend so much energy trying to just not be with what's our experiences, the sadness, the grief, the anger, the disappointment, the confusion, the longing, all these types of things. So if we can just allow those to be, then so many other things will just fall into place. I think I got a little circuitous there, but is this helpful?
Thank you.
Yeah, her comment reminded me of a sermon where the deacon had talked about coming in on her daughter, and she was on top of the dresser playing with lipstick, and you know she started to get upset, and then she had a turn and like, you know, this is my daughter, and then all of a sudden it was like, it's okay, you know, she's just there. But then, and so in that moment, it's like it felt like you were on this journey where all of a sudden you're feeling light and like, yeah, we need to just let go. But then she made it into a should, and it just became a heaviness. And I feel like, and so by the end of the sermon, I'm just feeling like heavy. And I think it's like there's that aspiration, those moments, and you're like, oh, yeah, like just allow this. And then there's this lightness about life. But then I make it a should, and it's sort of heavy. I was wondering if you could speak to that.
I have a sense that the fish felt like it should ride on the camel. Right? So there's this sense of like, I'm doing this, you know, but it just feels so uncomfortable to be on this camel or something like that. So this is my playful way of saying it's uncomfortable. And I would say it's extra. Like this sense of should. This should often comes from, outer and inner expectations. But there's instead of like having these expectations of how we believe that we should behave, is there a way that we can bring curiosity to all of our experiences? This, and curiosity requires some of this openness of the heart and mind, instead of like, oh, this is good, this is bad, you know, we're slapping labels on things, instead of like, wow, what's going on here? Or maybe for an example, this lightness, and then just like, oh, okay, there's lightness here. Oh, and then I feel heaviness. But then to bring some of this curiosity to the heaviness, instead of I shouldn't feel this, or I wish it weren't this way, then there's a way that the heaviness can just be heaviness without it being a problem. Was this helpful at all, what I said? I think I kind of...
Yeah, I think, but the part of it is that there's that desire for that lightness, which can be inspirational, but then it can also like turn heavy. So I think you talked about the heaviness, but also how do we, like, that recognition that there's something, we can be bigger.
Yeah. So I might use the word expectation, because inside the aspiration is this expectation that, oh, it should be, or I want it to be. This isn't okay, dang it. And we're trying to fix it or make it be different. And it turns out that the way is to, as best we can we be with our experience? Can we acknowledge what it is? Can we feel like, oh, I want things to be lighter, and they're not lighter now. And to just feel like, oh, this heaviness and disappointment feels like this. And just hanging out with the heaviness and disappointment. Wow, this is so heavy. This is terrible. This isn't what I wanted. Then if we can just hang out there for a little bit, it starts to open up. It starts to open up. And this is kind of like the curiosity. Curiosity is pointing to our being open. Then the experience opens and it becomes lighter. So the more we're able to meet experience, the more we could say, I use the word letting go, we could say opening will be lighter. Does this... So it's, I've used
almost
this.
Almost like you bring lightness to the heaviness, and the curiosity is like almost an attitude that can eventually make it.
There you go. There you go. That's right.
Yeah, no, I think that makes.
This is a tall order. I'm not saying this is easy, and I am not saying that we will get this right away, but this is the way. I am saying this to more and more freedom. As best we can we meet what's happening, our actual experience. I'm not talking about ideas and concepts, memories, what other people are doing. I'm talking about what our experience is as best we can. Can we hold it and be with it? And then this letting go brings lightness, brightness, openness, ease, spaciousness, more freedom. But it does require that we're turning towards the dukkha. It does require that we acknowledge the heaviness, the uncomfortableness, as best we can.
So I've been thinking, as you've been talking about control and holding on, and the counter to that being letting go. And I think the acceptance comes in. The other word that comes to me is trust.
Nice.
And I'm just throwing that out there.
Trust
is sort of an antithesis to control.
Yeah. And even to trust that it's okay to just hang out with the experience. So in the path of practice that the Buddha laid out, he pointed to trust as one of the early steps. And I would say one way we can talk about trust is we just learn from our experience. So at first it's a little bit of maybe it happens accidentally that there's some letting go, or we end up staying with an experience and we realize, oh, I could handle that better than I thought I could. Or maybe there's a way. Sometimes I talk about trust that you don't have to fix it right now. And maybe that's all the trust. That's just you don't have to fix it this moment. Just maybe that's all that's required. And then we learn. We just start to learn, oh, that wasn't so bad. And actually a little bit more ease and lightness showed up. So the trust, it's not a big trust like, oh, just trust Diana. She said it in October and or something. It's nothing like that. It's more just learn from your experience, but maybe trust that you don't have to fix it right now.
Yeah, I hear that.
Thank you. Okay, I think I can talk to you, Susan, afterwards, because here we are at the end of our time together. And thank you for your attention. And Hafiz is fish on a camel and this beautiful person on an elephant as you maybe have your own vehicle, not a camel or an elephant, on your way home tonight. May it have a safe journey home. And I wish you a wonderful rest of the evening. Thank you.